David, the Tchaikovsky Violin Concerto has a special meaning for you, doesn't it?
Absolutely. My greatest musical achievement in my life, apart from becoming concertmaster of the Philadelphia Orchestra, was winning a prize at the International Tchaikovsky Competition in Moscow in 1986. I don't know about these days, but certainly in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, that competition, which was held once every 4 years, was considered kind of like the Olympics of music. And it was a long road getting there, preparation, about 5-6 years of preparation, and then going there, winning a prize, and then kind of it helped launch my solo career to a certain extent. And then after that, the next step was to come into the Philadelphia Orchestra. So the Tchaikovsky competition and the Tchaikovsky concerto are forever linked with my career.
This is such a famous concerto. It's also one of the more difficult ones, I understand.
Yes, it is certainly one of the standard warhorse violin concertos, but it's kind of sometimes perhaps considered a notch below the real greats like Beethoven and Brahms. But in my opinion, it is right up there with the greats, and I treat it as such, and I love the piece, and I think it is profound and beautiful and some of the greatest stuff that Tchaikovsky ever wrote. And it is certainly the piece, one piece that I have played more than any other through my association with the competition. And I just love the piece so much. I haven't played it in the last couple of years so much because I played it so much during the first 10 years of my career here in Philly. And I get to play a concerto just about every year with the Philadelphia Orchestra. And I've played with some wonderful conductors, some of the giants in our industry.
And what was it like playing this with Maestro Savalas? And how did it come to be that you were the soloist in this concert? Do you remember?
I don't remember too clearly, but I think it was after he had stepped down that he came back and I played this series of Tchaikovsky's with him, I think 4 times. And as I said, I've played every year with so many fantastic conductors. And yet this week of Tchaikovsky concertos with Savalas is without question, it was the highlight of my career. And it was the most kind of profound experience for me, the most organic music making. I will certainly never, ever forget that kind of magic that I felt that week and that I'm still trying to recapture, but I'm sure won't ever happen because it was Savalas.
Sounds as if it was bringing together this very powerful, emotional piece of music with a conductor with whom you had a pretty strong relationship.
Yes. Each member of the Philadelphia Orchestra is very proud of who they were hired by. And for those of us who were hired, many of us who were hired in the Savalas era, it's a huge honor to say that you are kind of given the stamp of approval by Wolfgang Savalas. And so getting this opportunity to play my favorite concerto with my beloved music director at that time who hired me, really, it all just came together, and I'm not quite sure I recall how I was given the opportunity to play Tchaikovsky because it's one of those pieces that's played probably once every 2 or 3 years, at least, with all the big soloists. But I certainly treasure those performances.
Looking at the concerto itself, can you comment on how you approach it, what the difficult parts are, what the range is in terms of emotion and musical difficulty?
Well, I treat it as a profound work of art, yet I understand that there are moments that are very, very exciting and full of virtuosity and bravura. I really try to bring a lot of the warmth and profundity that I think the piece deserves. And yet, when it's time to really give it the gas, I really try to not hold back at all and let it go.
Tchaikovsky, you've said, has a certain technical difficulty, and there's just learning all those notes. And when you were younger, when you were playing in the competition, for example, that was perhaps a big, big challenge. But now, when you play something like that, or even in this broadcast from some years back, you perhaps approach it a different way.
Tchaikovsky, in the finals in '86, it was a little bit of just trying to survive. Fast forward to 2005, I believe. And here I am. I'm concertmaster of the Philadelphia Orchestra. I've been in the job for a few years. I'm just starting to get my feet under me and getting kind of used to the job and feeling a little bit more comfortable on stage when I have to play a solo. You know, you have to remember, it is very, very daunting to play any kind of solo with the great Philadelphia Orchestra in front of one's colleagues with one of the greatest conductors who has ever lived.
And how did Maestro Savalas approach it?
You know, a lot of people assume that Maestro Savalas was all about Strauss and Beethoven, Brahms and Bruckner. But many of us agree that he did Russian music really, really well. Rimsky-Korsakov and Shostakovich and Tchaikovsky. And I think he approached the violin concerto just as I had hoped he would, which is to take it very seriously as a profound work of art. On top of that was a layer of perhaps a little bit of poignancy. He knew his days were numbered conducting this orchestra. His health was starting to fail. He was aged at that point. And I knew that this was probably the last opportunity I was going to have to play a solo with Savalas. And so it was pretty mellow. We had a conductor meeting beforehand where, you know, he kind of sat at the piano and played along with me some of the accompaniment. And then, you know, we kind of talked about a few corners and a few tempos and things like that. But there wasn't too much advanced planning. And then we got on stage and it was just very natural and organic and warm and a lot of smiles kind of exchanged on stage. And each day after Thursday night, you know, he kind of gave me this like eyebrows up like, wow, that was pretty good. And then Friday afternoon, big crowd. I remember my family was there and you know, he just came, kind of gave me a wink. And then Saturday night was just really, really amazing. It was the whole week was just so memorable.
Now, because of your position, you had a relationship with him offstage as well as on stage. What was he like to work with?
Well, he was a very formal man. People used to say, oh, he's the Kapellmeister. He's like very academic. And yet he was very warm. He had a great sense of humor. In some ways, he was kind of a throwback. You know, he always wore the same suit and the same vest and the same tie. And he was very formal, and he would call many members of the orchestra Mr. Woodhams or Mr. Orlando or Mr. Bookspan. And then, for some reason, he called me not Mr. Kim, not David. For some reason, he called me Dave, which was so funny to me. And I always got a kick out of that. But Maestro was very, very formal and very erudite, intelligent, articulate, profound. And yet he loved things like going to Home Depot and looking around at different faucets. And, you know, he liked cool gadgets and electronic things. And he liked nice cars and so he was just a really kind of a real mystery of a man. He would always drink a Coca-Cola at intermission, and then he would always drink a Budweiser after the concert. He was just a interesting guy. I remember when I was here for my two-week trial period, it was down to, for the job of concertmaster, myself and another gentleman, and each of us was asked to come back and play 2 weeks of concerts with the orchestra, including, for me, it was a concert in Carnegie Hall. It was during a Strauss festival. It was just right in Savalas's wheelhouse in terms of his repertoire. And I came in and to the rehearsals, and I just did not want to stick out. I didn't want my sound to stick out. I didn't want to, in terms of timing, I didn't want to be too early or late. I just wanted to kind of blend in. I just thought, this incredible instrument, the Philadelphia Orchestra, I just don't want to make waves. So I just kind of tried to blend. And at one of the first rehearsals, the personnel manager came to me at the beginning of the rehearsal and said, Susanna Byrne at that time, she said, Maestro would like to see you at break. And I thought, oh my gosh, this could be it. Either he's going to tell me I got the job or he's going to tell me I didn't get the job. It could be either way because he was showing nothing. I was getting no hints or clues. And I went back at break, quivering, and he looked at me and he said, so I need to ask you something. And I couldn't even respond. Then he said, could you play louder? And he just couldn't hear me. And he said, listen, you're the concertmaster. Lead. Play. Out. Lead. Let me hear you. So the second half began. And within about, I don't know, about 5 seconds, he looked over at me with that look like, that's it. Yep. That's it. Good. And then continued rehearsal. And then another week and a half passed. Many concerts here in Philadelphia at the Academy, Carnegie Hall, some conversations, and that was it.
And you got the job.
Yeah. I was on the back patio of my best friend's house in Nyack outside of New York, and we were grilling steaks. And I had left his phone number. This was before cell phones. And I had left my friend's phone number. And president of the orchestra at that time, Joe Kluger, called me and said, so, David, how would you feel about moving to Philadelphia?
That's great. Now, back to this concert. Bill DePasquale was acting as concertmaster for this concert because you were soloist.
Bill DePasquale was a fiercely proud man, proud of his heritage as a DePasquale and a part of that incredible musical family. He was fiercely proud to be a member of the Philadelphia Orchestra. He was a class act, and he was instrumental in helping me to learn my craft as concertmaster here. And he did it in a way that was very kind of understated and classy and not in front of my colleagues, which now looking back, I'm so grateful for. He would, at that time, we would share a dressing room. And so he would just kind of give me little subtle hints. So he was a wonderful, in some ways, a mentor. And I was very sad when he retired, but was very happy that he kind of enjoyed a continuation, almost a second career as a conductor and teacher after he retired. And it was sweet that he actually conducted my little daughter's youth orchestra in Bryn Mawr. And she learned from him, and she still carries around a little picture of him in her violin case. And just isn't it funny how things work out like that?
The orchestra really is a kind of family.
It is, and I try to remind myself every day that there is not one part of anything in this job that we should take for granted. There's nothing that we deserve about being in this orchestra. It is a privilege, and time flies, and our time in this great institution flies so quickly, and it's over before we know it. And so we should love it and treat it with the greatest care and respect during our watch while we are sitting in these chairs on that stage. Our duties as caretakers of that great tradition, that heritage, it's just, you can't, it's difficult to put into words because it is so important to this city, to this region, to American music. And so a lifetime of music training that we all go through, all the hard work, the practice, it is, of course, for ourselves, our own benefit, but even more so, it helps to benefit the ongoing legacy of this great orchestra.
It's wonderful music, and it's wonderful to talk with you, David, about the music of the past and the great musicians of the past and present, and look forward to a great future.
Thank you so much, Susan.